Wars of Identity. One of Britain's leading soldier-statesmen, General Sir Rupert Smith, has made the point in his recent book, The Utility of Force, that conventional military advantage may prove useless in facing the real security threats of the 21st century, and indeed has regularly done so in the wars of the past half century. Our military thinking, says Smith, is still bound up in the vision of industrial conflict of mass armies, as in the Napoleonic Wars, World War I, and World War II. Yet in recent decades, and for the foreseeable future, countries are faced with a very different kind of security challenge, which Smith labels as wars amongst the peoples. War is no longer a single massive event of military decision that delivers a conclusive political result. Conflicts are waged for political advantage and public opinion as much as for battlefield victory. The conflicts are open-ended. The sides are often non-state actors. In these circumstances, the vast industrial might of the U.S. military can easily prove useless. All of America's battles in recent decades have taken place in the developing world, and often to disastrous political effect. The United States failed in Vietnam, Lebanon, Somalia, and now Iraq, and most likely Afghanistan as well. In no case has the military superiority of the United States proved at all useful in achieving political ends. But the United States is not alone in experiencing a series of such debacles. The European imperial powers withdrew from their colonies after World War II not because their armies were militarily defeated, but because their armies could not secure the political objectives of maintaining imperial rule and legitimacy. At play is a fundamental issue of politics. In the post-World War II era, after generations or centuries of colonial rule, the forces of nationalism and self-determination became irresistible in the developing countries. The idea that human dignity requires freedom from foreign occupation has become the most powerful political idea of our time. All of this was immeasurably strengthened by the spread of literacy, mass communications, and a modicum of economic development. Yet even as the United States has proclaimed its fundamental commitment to human freedom, it has disregarded its own anti-colonial history and the basic facts of modern history. Thus, the United States substituted for France in Vietnam's struggle for independence and could not understand that the Vietnamese were fighting a war of national liberation. The United States replaced Britain as the chief outside meddler in the Middle East oil states, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, but could not understand that every U.S. manipulation of local Middle East politics ignited powerful anti-colonial antibodies. President Bush fantasizes that he has liberated Iraq, but to the Iraqis, the United States is yet one more occupying power, indeed one that has partnered with Britain, Iraq's original imperial power. Nor has the United States tried to understand the roots of Arab views of Israel as a colonial imposition. While compromise is the only productive approach for both parties to the conflict, the Arab view is not the result of Arab anti-Semitism, but of Arab nationalism and anti-colonialism. For these reasons, military adventures such as the Iraq War are bound to fail, and I wrote as much in 2003 during the lead-up to the war. Under much worse circumstances than even Afghanistan, Lebanon, and Somalia, the United States is about to insert itself for years into the vicious internecine struggles of Iraq, where tens of thousands of angry young men will be keen to pick off the occupying force. Our smart bombs won't prove as helpful on ground level as they do at 35,000 feet. The military should not have been sent to Iraq in the first place. We needed diplomacy, not war. Fundamental drivers of violence. The United States does need a powerful military that can defend against conventional forces. However, most American military engagements since 1960 have been in developing countries that have recently experienced a state failure. In fact, the second half of the 20th century brought a sharp increase in civil conflicts within countries, while the number of interstate conflicts remained far fewer. The links between the lack of development and state failure are clear. When a country is too poor to provide its people with basic necessities such as health care, and when the underlying ecology makes agriculture difficult without fertilizer and irrigation, any change can push a society off the edge and into outright desperation. As described in Chapter 5, Something as simple as bad rains can trigger internal conflict when a society is living at the edge of survival. In Chapter 8, we also discussed how a youth bulge, which results in a high ratio of easily inflamed youths relative to those who might mediate disputes, tends to raise the likelihood of civil conflict. Young men are even more likely to join armed groups and engage in violence when economic activity is weak and other income-earning opportunities do not exist. In a similar vein, the work of Colin Call shows how demographic and environmental stress, in the form of rapid population growth, environmental degradation, and unequal distribution of renewable resources, leads to violent state failure or violence instigated by elites to further their interests. In particular, Call argues that demographic or environmental stresses are most likely to lead to state failure in societies that are deeply divided along ethnic, religious, or class lines, and in societies where large parts of the population have little influence over the government. At the core of the failed state problem are problems of poverty, the youth bulge, and rapid urbanization, all of which have sustainable development as their only real solution. None of these problems can be adequately addressed by the militaries of rich countries, powerful as these militaries may be. Our other tools, such as well-targeted foreign aid to promote development and sustain the environment, are likely to be much more effective at relieving desperation, fostering economic activity, and reducing the likelihood of conflict and subsequent U.S. military involvement.